I'm Brian McCreath from WCRB. I'm with Ludovic Morlot, who is back at Symphony Hall a little unexpectedly, but we're very happy you're back. Thanks for taking a little time to talk with me today, Ludovic.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks.
Well, that's maybe the first question that I have for you is how much notice you had that you would be here to conduct this program originally set up for Jerzy Bielolovic.
Well, I had a few days, actually, which is it's pretty comfortable when it comes to stepping in. You know, I've done much worse. I remember flying to New York overnight to make my debut with the New York Philharmonic, for instance. So, you know, I had about 4 or 5 days to not only put my head into the music again, but organize travel and all those things, which is always a hassle, of course. But I'm thrilled to be back here.
Well, and you mentioned the New York Philharmonic, but it was during your time as an assistant conductor here that there was plenty of that going on as well, where you were stepping in sort of almost at the last minute, I guess.
Very true, very true. I mean, including the California tour, of course, which we took the Boston Symphony on tour there. It was the winter of 2011, I believe. So, yeah.
Well, it was sad that Maestro Bielolovic couldn't be here, but the program that you inherited is one of the ones that I spotted on the calendar immediately when it was announced, because it's such an attractive program of all Czech music. And I wonder if you have been to Prague or the Czech Republic, and whether that experience, if you have, has helped to inform what you do with this music.
Well, I mean, for one thing, you know, even though some people always ask if my first name is Slavic, you know,
yes.
And I have no roots in that part of the world, but I always felt a very natural attraction, not only for Czech music, but Eastern European music as a whole, but Slavic music, I should say, but also literature. And so yes, the answer is yes. I've always been tempted to travel to this part of the world, and I've been to Prague a few times, and actually wants to work with the Czech Philharmonic at the Rudolfinum. I remember doing Dvořák's 7th symphony there in the spring festival there. And actually it taught me a lot about the Czech music, because I always imagine this music to be played with a lot of velouté, you know, a lot of tenderness. And actually there are those moments, but most of the time they bring a real rustic and sometimes even aggressive, you know, kick to the articulation in this music, almost like the Czech language. You know, you think of music as a whole always represents a little bit of a national trend to how the language sounds like, and there's no difference with Czech, and we know this from, you know, I mean, Janáček's opera and music is very, very strongly based on the rhythm of the speech, of the language, and it's no different in Martinus and Dvořák and Smetana, for that matter.
I can't imagine. Dvořák's 7 in the Rudolfinum with the Czech Philharmonic must be just like everything that you wanted to do when you decided to be a conductor. It's all happening right there.
Yeah, it was a real lesson for me. I was quite young, of course, and they were incredibly generous with, you know, I think they love their music and their heritage so much that, you know, everybody that is really willing to learn from them in that level, they're extremely generous. And they, you know, I'm that kind of a musician, you know, and, you know, day after day, I feel that I want to learn more about everything. And that was an incredible platform for me to grow on that front.
The Martinus Symphony that you're conducting, though, is, you can say, sure has roots in the Czech part of the world, but also is apparently so inspired by not just the BSO, but Charles Munch in particular. When you look at that piece and when you conduct through it and interpret it, how do you find that balance? What do you feel like equal parts Czech and Munch, or how does it strike you as a piece of music in what it's reflecting about its inspirations?
Well, I find it's a little collage, you know, and there are even quotes from Juliet, for instance, from his opera Juliet. So there are clearly some moments that are very, very Czech, almost more in the nostalgia of missing his home country, of course. But I find more than American, this music actually feels very French for me. And it feels very French in the sense that we also know that just before Martinu came to America, he was in Paris for a few years. And you know, that influence that he must have gotten from even hearing jazz there. And then, it's all syncopated rhythms, and there's a lot of ideas that has like this ostinato gestures in the orchestras, almost like the background of some of the French scores. You know, think of Ravel or Daphnis, for instance. You know, you get some of those same material, and very strong sense of melodies. So even though it was written clearly for the virtuosity of American orchestras, all of his symphonies, you know, because he wrote all his symphonies for American orchestras year after year once he emigrated to the US. I think there's no coincidence that it was written for Charles Munch and the Boston Symphony, because it has this very French element of almost improvisation as well. You know, there's an idea of... I find when I say collage, I find that there's almost some moments where it feels aleatory music, where it gets lost into that kind of color of superposing, you know, very simple chords, but creating what I said to the orchestra rehearsing something interesting that I find with this music is that it's like full sun blazing through stained glass windows for me. Because it has always this very intense expression, but it's always diffused with all kind of different colors, you know. And then in this piece, even more so, you know, you have these elements, and then it ends up with this beautiful prayer. So, you know, we are completely surrounded by this element of almost spiritual element in that symphony, I find.
This is the first chance we've really had to talk, and so I've always wanted to ask you, at least for the last few years since you've been in Seattle, how do you describe the character? You know the character of the Boston Symphony very well from your time working here and many guest appearances. What's the character of the Seattle Symphony, and has that changed in the time that you've been there?
Well, I think we are working very hard in the last few years to actually define that character and define this voice, that individuality that we want the Seattle Symphony to be. I think, you know, it's a group of musicians that is extremely versatile, and it has pro and cons in so many ways, because they can do everything, and they can do Mozart one night, Mahler the next, and then a pop show the next day. So I love that versatility, and yet you really want to find some focus in establishing a voice for the orchestra. So I think the sound of the orchestra has changed tremendously since I arrived, also because of the complete different focus on repertoire. You know, we've been exploring a lot of new music, of course, but a lot of French repertoire, a lot of Slavic music, and going back to actually do more of the American repertoire, but less in mid 20th century. Like, you know, my predecessor Gerard Schwartz was doing a lot of mid 20th century American music. I'm more going back to the modernism of Ives and Gershwin and the other way, you know, going after this Elliot Carter and you know, there's some leftover after all of my days here as an assistant with James Levine, you know. But you know, Ives for me is really, if you want me to define a little bit what kind of repertoire I would associate with the orchestra doing the best work would be Ives or French music. They're spectacular with this because I think they haven't played much of it. So we started work on composers like Dutilleux or Poulenc or Messiaen. We started this repertoire completely fresh. And I think, therefore, we have been able to grow really fast with this repertoire. I think it's an orchestra that will develop more and more intimacy with the classical repertoire as we go along, you know. And also as a younger conductor, I have to go through the same journey as well. So.
Well, I was very, very happy that, I think it was literally 2 days ago, that the new Ives CD arrived at my desk. How great was that? That was terrific. And I've only had a chance to just listen to a little bit of it. But I think that if I can give you one instant reflection on it, what I hear in the little bits that I've listened to is a real intimacy that I think that a lot of Ives recordings maybe miss, that there's a big picture of Ives that people really go for, sort of an epic almost, kind of big broad stroke canvas. And it's not that that's lacking from your recording with Seattle, but there's an intimacy, there's a close-up. I feel like I'm right next to it. And it's something I really love. I'm looking forward to hearing more of it. And you've just kind of told me why it was important for you to record Ives. But I wonder if that's kind of the kind of thing you were going for.
Oh, totally. And you know, it goes alongside everything that I'm trying to do with music those days, is that I find that the orchestra repertoire really starts interesting me when we treat it as chamber music. Because and you know, we are talking sometimes about the voicing and but this is sometimes I find that in orchestra setting, it's because we don't have enough time. It's because sometimes musicians relay too much on the conductors. You know, sometimes I just wish that by sitting in an orchestra, musicians would still have this initiative that they have as chamber musicians. You know, where is the melody? You know, what voice am I playing in that chord? Am I playing the third or the root? Or should I play a little stronger? Should I play a little sharp? A little, you know. And orchestras that have that kind of curiosity, suddenly I find that the sound textures become transparent. And it doesn't mean that it's less powerful, because I think ultimately the fact that you hear more of the inner voices, that you hear more of the counterpoint, you hear more of the dialogue between the different instruments, makes the musical scores come to life in a multidimensional way. And this is, I mean, that's in some ways what I like going for with music of Ives, but also music of Mahler somehow, because I think Mahler has this dialogues going on constantly between the different voices. Even sometimes, as you know, they play the two violin sections will play the same music with different dynamics. And that should create that kind of multidimensional element. So I'm always very trying to be very aware and concerned about those issues, so that we hear the melody, but we also hear those things that sometimes we don't get a chance to hear in those scores that we think we know so well. And you know, so my approach is no different with any kind of music in that sense.
From our vantage point, 3,000 miles away here in Boston, it seems apparent that you've done a huge amount of work and been very successful in connecting this orchestra, maybe reconnecting this orchestra to its city, to its audience, to its external environment. And I've been curious over these last few years, kind of seeing that happen, whether you arrived in Seattle and saw this as a need that needed to happen there, or if this might have happened no matter what orchestra you were leading, that you just have this way of looking at the relationship of a city and its orchestra.
No, I think it was more urgent in Seattle than it would have been in other places where I had been before, you know, as guest conductors or as assistant. I tell you why. I think the West Coast, you know, generally speaking, doesn't have this same tradition when it comes to culture. I mean, I think I can say it. You know, of course, there's a huge interest for our organization in the city. But, you know, even the city council, for instance, doesn't embrace the importance of what the arts can actually provide to the city. And I think as cultural organizations, we had to take this in our own hands. And by being successful connecting to the community and doing a lot of community programs and community engagement programs, then we made the people responsible aware of the need of the community for this relationship. And by doing this, we've been successful actually finally talking to them and having them embrace the importance of those things. Because, you know, we're so fortunate with so many people moving into Seattle for working for Amazon, Boeing, Starbucks, you know, Microsoft, you name it. But, you know, one of the truth is that those families also move there because there's a great orchestra to go to. And like any big city and any great cities, you know, we are the heartbeat of the city. And there's no way to imagine a city the size of Seattle on the map that wouldn't have a symphony orchestra as really the main cultural organization there. So yes, I was fully aware that it was needed, and yes, we've been working very hard in in creating those relationships with community. And you know, in some ways, our work is always going to be that duality between artistic excellence and be relevant for our community. And it's no different in Boston, I guess. And it in some ways, sometimes you have to be more aggressive with it because you don't have the same kind of support.
And that's the thing, right? So you say that the West Coast cities don't have quite the same legacy and cultural awareness built in. And yet I look at what you're doing in Seattle as something that we here in Boston and anywhere else should be really paying attention to, because we can't take it for granted. Even in Boston, we can't take necessarily the BSO for granted in its place in culture. I think it's doing great right now, but we always have to be trying harder. So I appreciate the work you've done.
Well, it's true for community work, and it's true for education too. You know, I mean, every orchestra nowadays has to do the work that school district is not doing anymore. You know, and there's as much as we can do, obviously, but we have to be constantly pulling the strings to make that happen, because that we all know the world would be better off. You know, if every kid in our cities would actually have had experienced live symphonic music. And we don't want them to be professional musicians. We want them to be feeling comfortable, you know, 30 years along the road in their journey in coming back to the symphony, because they will have a memory about it. You know, I'm sure you heard about this gift from Taylor Swift to the Seattle Symphony.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. And you know, I'll summarize it briefly, but you know, she heard one of our recordings that won the Grammy last year, fell in love with it, decided to support our musicians. And you know, she wrote this beautiful letter to me explaining why she felt like doing so. And that was very interesting, because it supports what I was just saying. She had memories of going to the concert hall with her grandmother as a kid, or to the opera as well, because her grandmother was an opera singer. And the fact that she shared that with me makes me very strong to go out to the community and say, look, this is a whole generation that can be inspired by that. Does Taylor Swift go to listen symphony concert every week? No. Is she a subscriber in Nashville Symphony or wherever? I don't think so. But you know, the fact that she can be moved by symphonic music from some memory she has about it should tell us the message that we must create that memory, early memory, for every kid in the community. That's all.
Yeah, and she's an example of someone who we wouldn't expect that from her. We wouldn't have expected it. It was a bit of a surprise and a delightful surprise too. But you must have had a great smile on your face when that letter came in, and not just because it's a nice letter from a very famous person, but because what you're saying that it connects to the whole mission of what you're trying to do anyway.
Yes, it did carry a very, very strong message, and also she was very. And we don't have to talk about this for hours, but you know, she was very, also very insistent that the musicians would be rewarded for this. And I think it's also another sign that, you know, she understands what kind of work is needed to carry out those stories to the communities.
And just coming back to Boston here, I suppose it was just good. I saw you in rehearsal, and you know so many of these musicians so well. It's just like coming home for you, I expect.
Yes, even though I was actually surprised the last few times I came, also Tanglewood last summer, that many, many new musicians from when I was an assistant here just over 10 years ago now. And, you know, and marvelous musicians, but lots of new faces, you know. And yes, it does feel like family, you know, which sometimes talking from their perspective must be annoying, because they know all of my bad habits, you know. But they seem to be patient enough with me to carry through this. So it's nice. Thank you.
Ludovic Morlo, thank you for taking a few minutes to talk with me about it today.
It's a real pleasure. Thank you.